They clattered down the stairs. Esk saw them out of the house and bolted the door behind them. The sun was a red ball above the mountains, and there was already a few early stars out. She wandered around the dark kitchen until she found a scrap of dip candle and a tinderbox. After a great deal of effort, she managed to light the candle and stood it on the table. Although it didn't really light the room, it simply peopled the darkness with shadows. Then she found Granny's rocking chair by the cold fireplace and settled down to wait. Time passed. Nothing happened. Then there was a tapping at the window. Esk took up the candle stub and peered through the thick, round panes. A beady yellow eye blinked back at her. The candle guttered and went out. She stood stock still, hardly breathing. The tapping started again, and then stopped. There was a short silence. Then the door latch rattled. "Something nasty comes," the boys had said. She felt her way back across the room until she nearly tripped over the rocking chair and dragged it back and wedged it as best she could in front of the front door. The latch gave a final clonk and went silent. Esk waited, listening until the silence roared in her ears. Then something started to bang against the little window in the scullery, softly but insistently. After a while it stopped. A moment later it started again in the bedroom above her. A faint scrabbling noise, a claw kind of noise. Esk felt that bravery was called for. But on a night like this, bravery lasted only as long as a candle stayed alight. She felt her way back across the dark kitchen, eyes tightly shut, until she reached the door. There was a thump from the fireplace as a big lump of soot fell down, and when she heard the desperate scratchings coming from the chimney, she slipped the bolts, threw open the door, and darted out into the night. The cold struck like a knife. Frost had put a crust on the snow. She didn't care where she was going, but quiet terror gave her a burning determination to get there as fast as she could. Inside the cottage, the crow landed heavily in the fireplace, surrounded by soot and muttering irritably to itself. It hopped into the shadows, and a moment later there was a bang on the latch of the stairway door and the sound of fluttering on the stairs. Esk reached up as high as she could and felt around the tree for the marker. This time she was lucky. But the pattern of dots and grooves told her that she was over a mile from the village and had been running in the wrong direction. There was a cheese-rind moon and a sprinkling of stars, small and bright and pitiless. The forest around her was a pattern of black shadows and pale snow, and she was aware not all the shadows were standing still. Everyone knew there were wolves in the mountains, because on some nights their howls echoed down from the high tops. But they seldom came near the village. The modern wolves were the offsprings of ancestors that had survived because they had learned that human meat had sharp edges. But the weather was hard, and this pack was hungry enough to forget all about natural selection. Esk remembered what all the children were told. Climb up a tree, light a fire, when all else fails, find a stick and at least hurt them. Never try to outrun them. The tree behind her was a beech, smooth and unclimbable. Esk watched a long shadow detach itself from a pool of darkness in front of her and move a little closer. She knelt down, tired, frightened, unable to think, and scrabbled under the burning cold snow for a stick. Granny Weatherwax opened her eyes and stared at the ceiling, which was cracked and bulged like a tent. She concentrated on remembering that she had arms, not wings, and didn't need to hop. It was always wise to lie down for a bit after a borrow, to let one's mind get used to one's body, but she knew she didn't have the time.
"Drat the child," she muttered, and tried to fly onto the bed rail.
The crow, who had been through all this dozens of times before, and who considered, insofar as birds can consider anything.